Hi everyone, Nam Om Myoho Renge Kyo. All right, I want to start off this part two discussing something which I probably should have discussed earlier. I've talked about it in other videos, but we're going to confront it a lot here as we continue in this particular Go Show, as we do quite often anyway, but I haven't talked about it in a while, so let me give you a bit of a lens, if you will, as I often do, try to offer more modern or present day understanding of things, issues that we confront a lot in these translations, because these translations are done by, in large part, by Westerners. From earlier, certainly, Asian sources, but be that as it may, we certainly, if you're watching my videos, are an English-speaking person, whether it's your native language or not. And there are, as languages transfer boundaries in the East and West, North and South, and there are dialectical differences, and therefore translations are always subject to interpretation, right? So certainly that's far evident in Western translations, especially as cultural realities and training are sometimes insurmountable in our ability to grasp with another civilization, another culture, another peoples were set out to discuss or describe or understand. And as we pursue meaning in Buddhism, this is something we confront all the time. So the two main things I want to talk about is the issue of time, which in the West, and now globally, but I mean in print and how we talk as a society, as a peoples, we think about time in different ways, certainly, but conceptually, in a very large sense, we understand time very differently. And the other part of that, which is related to time, is genealogy. How we pass on not only traits. I mean, we're very fond of saying you have your mother's eyes and your dad's whatever. But not as much. That's quite common, but not as common is you have your grandmother's this or that, or your grandfather's this or that, let alone great-grandfather traits. In the West, I don't know about you, but unless your family is very engaged in genealogy, there's very little discussion of how your ancestry reflects itself in your life. And that's the proper, I think, perspective or Western rhetoric around which we should view the discussions of these hundreds, thousands of years old discussion about Buddhist practice and the influence and the heritage and the transmission of the meaning of Buddhism. I almost said teachings, and I think we get lost in that word because the fundamental from day one in Buddhist teaching, which is really, I apologize. Or as I often say, the self-learning of Buddhism is this idea of homage, or as you might say, homage. So as it pertains to Buddhism, to clarify if you're not following me so far, This idea of previous existences or future existences, or in a more direct sense, as we'll, I mean, we'll touch on that in this Go Show, we already have, but also the idea of seeds and harvest. I think to a modern person, seeds and harvest is an abstract of farming, certainly. But even from personal gardening, we're familiar with the passage of time, and this is all about time, the passage of time of when we create a body of soil, whether it's in a pot or in a field, that can support, that has, in other words, the nutrients in it to be able to feed some nascent energy in a seed, or a bulb or whatever, that you can nurture with that soil and other nutrients and water and sunlight, to grow, and continue to grow and mature into, something that can provide nutrition itself, food for the circle of life, for you and I, for animals, so on and so forth. And so that's the harvest, right? Or you might call it post-harvest, the feeding, whatever. But still, this passage of time and the effort, more to the point, of investing in a future production. This idea is extremely important in all of the teachings of Buddhism from day one to Nichiren and to today, as I speak to you. So the idea that seeds have been planted in previous existences is something we contend with in the writings all the time. So what I want to do, and the way I've talked about this in the past, is to explain that life is a moment-to-moment thing, that we leave one moment and it dies or goes into extinction as it completes passing on its huge trove of traits and ideas and attachments and what have you to the next moment, which we are experiencing even as each sound wave of each letter of each word that I'm saying is also dying and passing on to the next moment. This happens so quickly that our perceptive mind, our human perceptive mind, we can't see it. We can't interrupt it. The only thing that we can do that is available to it us is to influence that constant flow of birth and death, birth and death, birth and death, birth and death. So I've talked about this quite a lot. I have videos specifically addressing it. It's part of larger subjects like the 3,000 realms and so forth. This idea of the passage of time, which is both unfathomably fast, but also heavy and weighted by a perception of a longer perception of time that is historical. In Buddhism, both of those concepts, both ends of those concepts, if you will, they collapse. And so let me explain what I mean by collapsing. When Nichiren talks about the seeds that the Buddha planted in the former days of the law or the middle days of the law, and the time of sowing and the time of harvest, and all of these beautiful analogies, they can seem to obfuscate our truth. And there's that word truth. So really, I really need to go and because I continue to edit these voluminous writings and translations to clarify in a modern way what words like truth and faith and those kind of things that we're very accustomed to hearing in the West, but they're charged with all kinds of characterizations and charisma that really mislead our Buddhist practice. Truth in Buddhism is really about, in some cases, the word actuality would be much more accurate. But actuality is an experiential thing, right? So is truth. But truth has a mysticism attached to it that says this is beyond your capacity to understand. You're just a recipient of it. And Buddhism just isn't that. It's never that. Buddhism is about an experienced truth, an actual experience, a profound validation through one's own worldview. So we try in the West to disguise that mysticism with a personal truth or our truth, but the word truth still hangs on to this kind of comes from outside of you, and that's just not Buddhism. So I will be endeavoring to make those edits at some point. Just be aware. Just as I want you to be aware that time, when Buddhism talks about previous existences, it's really only talking about the influences of time and whether in your daily life, and certainly you can understand that from Eastern studies, we find that most cultures, even in the Eastern Western countries, the border of the East, that the older cultures, let me say it that way, civilizations throughout time on this globe have, in one way or another, given great reverence to their ancestors. Now, though you may feel some abstract indebtedness or connection to your ancestry, in the West today, it's really about like our DNA, like the peoples of Africa spreading throughout the continent and the migrations of peoples throughout the world. And we see that, but we're not really personally connected to it. In Buddhism, you're dealing with cultures that are very personally connected to it, pay homage to it. Excessively, you might say, but no, nonetheless, you have to understand that that influences the rhetoric. The way they talk about who they are is inclusive of ancestry. We don't do that. We're in the modern day world entirely, and certainly in Western cultures, we're very much about the I ego. I am a self-made da da da, right? We never look at what we accomplish in life from the lens of all of the paths, be it sacrifices or accomplishments, of our great, 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 and right? We don't think that way. But that kind of thinking permeates a lot of what we read, if not most of what we read in Buddhism. And so, from that kind of lens, that kind of interpretation of this life moment, comes the idea of previous existence. Because in some shape or form, my platform, my way of being, my way of speaking to you, comes from ancestry that goes back through France, England, Europe, entirely Asia, Middle Eastern, whatever, all the way back to Mother Africa, right? So that's a very strange concept for Westerners to integrate into our daily thinking. We can talk about it, and it can be a moment of fascination and go, wow, I wonder where this came from. But it's not in our daily logical thoughts, right? In these older writings, it still is. It still is a matter of actually describing yourself in a larger sense, which has all of the baggage that that entails. There's some baggage of history, there's some baggage of owning up to, or being responsible for, or just paying deep, deep respect for this now current ability or insight, or you see what I'm talking about here? And it all boils down to, and I speak in very modern terms, because I think to you and I today, to say that we're influenced is a shorthand, but an effective shorthand, because you and I understand influence, right? To whatever degree, we understand that we're influenced by our own actions and thoughts and things that we assimilate over time. Certainly, I can come up with very rudimentary examples that, you know, when you burn yourself, you inform yourself and you influence yourself to guard yourself against a future activity that will inevitably end up inflicting this same pain, right? That's very rudimentary. But in another way, a lot of what forms not just our opinions, but the way that we form our opinions comes from character traits developed that we can identify within our own relations, our own near field, if you will, in time terms, relations through our parents or brothers and sisters or teachers, or books that we've read. Where we've made categorical changes in our perspective. And that's all influence, right? So I hope that makes this a little less foggy to try to negotiate the rhetoric in here. But stay aware that that's what this rhetoric revolves around. It's not actually that I lived 10,000 years ago, and the actions I took then influenced the way I am now. But in a sense, biologically, I cannot deny that the very molecules of my body follow a birth, an actual physical birth, a samsaric birth and death. All the way back through tens of thousands of years of ancestry. How those influence me are basically the fact that I'm here today in this society, in this time. How deeply they inform the way I think, I don't know. I can only create an aura about that. But that has the potential negative of taking me away from experiencing this moment as real and within my function at this point to be. And to the degree that I can work with that and influence that, I influence just as deeply that karmic chain into my ancestry. This is why in the fifth meditation, when we do Gongyo, we consider ancestry, not because we have to individuate them as individuals, but because we pay homage to the very life force that has spawned us in this moment. We didn't just drop out of the sky. And even if we did, the sky itself has an origin and an origin beyond that. So this is what Buddhism pays homage to constantly, either through human samsaric existence or all of the samsaric instantiation. There is always a causal relationship, even to the very origin, or what some would call the original cause of life itself, right? So this is a very big subject, and I approach it from this way and from that way and all around it, and sometimes I talk about that process itself, the 3,000 realms. But understand that that kind of thinking, that responsibility for this moment and the birth of this moment, Ichin and Sanzen, and the implications of this moment into the future are constant point of reference in Buddhism. And actually, I would, you know, I hate using this term because it's so much overused and misused in modern society. But from this point of view is what comes the idea of mindfulness. Because what we are trying to be mindful of is that very thing, that each and every moment is in itself incredibly precious, as not only whatever came before it to influence its current state, but the influence that we put on that and the onus we put on that singular moment we are now just traveling through to influence it in a positive, life-giving human way toward the Buddha way into the future. The onus of that is immense, because you can't think of yourself uniquely without considering the entirety of everything that exists. This, to come at it from a different way, it suggests the oneness of Buddhist thought. That oneness is far more expansive than you can imagine in your own oneness. In fact, that your own oneness is the samsaric delusion that is the primary attachment that distances us from our Buddha nature. That individuation, though it's precious and important, because it creates this human samsaric perception to then perceive the greater one of life itself is far more expansive than we can conceptualize in our one moment of existence. And yet, we are a result of it, as well as an influence to it going forward. Time. So, with that perspective in mind, let's continue.